It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. You're going to learn something about a term that may be new to you today, source water protection. Mark O'Mara is the utility director for the town of Carbondale. Paul Hempel is a source water protection specialist with the Colorado Rural Water Association. So, gentlemen, you were telling me that this term source water protection actually came about back in the 90s. So it's nothing new, although maybe some of us still haven't caught on to this term yet.
Well, thanks a lot for this opportunity, Gabe. We're really excited to be here to help launch our newest initiative. And yes, in the 90s, there was what was called a wellhead protection program run through the EPA down to the states. And that program looked at groundwater wells and in a general sense, the protection of those wells. And then in the 1996 amendments to the Safe Drinking Water Act, they added surface water intake locations as part of the overarching protection measures, and that then morphed into source water protection.
Out of curiosity, does this have anything to do with, or is this somewhat connected to, for instance, like if you go to a zoo or a big public amusement park or place like that, you'll see the drain on the ground, and it's got the big sign that says, I wish I could remember the exact verbiage, something about drains to a river, do not put trash, or something like that. Is this all connected with that?
That's all part of it. Okay. You'll see it in Glenwood. You'll see it all up and down the valley where there are storm drains. They all have an impact on source water supplies. A lot of storm drains, they can be dry wells, which are basically absorb all the water and it goes into the groundwater, or they transfer that water into the rivers and streams that are close by. They all have an impact on water quality.
And therefore, that messaging, when you see a sticker or a nameplate or something that says, don't dump down the drain, that is part of source water protection in an educational sense, letting citizens know that that's a bad thing to do.
So why is it a bad thing to do?
Pollution, contamination. You hear a lot about groundwater influences of industrial, agricultural, farm animals, nitrates, nitrites, chemical compositions getting into the groundwater from herbicides, pesticides, some of the industrial applications for the Department of Defense, Rocky Flats, things like that. Those are all different aspects of contamination that kind of, you know, they hear about it and they don't think a whole lot about it. Well, sooner or later, it's going to end up in the groundwater and or in some of the surface water in the streams.
I noticed the pamphlet, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point today. The title is Keep It Clean Because We're All Downstream. And that's really kind of the layman's way of putting source water protection is, you know, there's somebody else downstream that could be consuming in some way whatever it is that you're putting in the water or in the as source water, which I guess is a more general term than tell me what it was, the wellhead protection program. Okay. As opposed to just what's in the well, we're talking source water. So where does it come from? Because
right.
It comes from somewhere before it gets to you.
Right. Where does your source of your drinking water supply come from?
I suppose, tell me if I'm oversimplifying this, but it sounds a lot like the sewer treatment plants, that we treat the water before we discharge it into back into the river or whatever. Is that to a some extent the same thing as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
The source water protection touches on the effluent and the discharge of wastewater treatment plants as well. The if you were to think of source water protection, the sewage treatment plants are regulated by the state and the EPA for nutrients, pollutants, and they monitor those on a regular basis. They send in monthly reports, and violations are dealt with severely because it has an effect on what's downstream. It has an effect on the rivers and the pristine quality of the water of the waters that are going through the state. And so it's municipalities are self-regulating in its own way to make sure that they are not the culprits for polluting the rivers, affecting the fishery, and making water contaminated for those downstream.
We've talked about everything we've talked about so far seems like it's been on very broad municipality, local government levels. The whole point of this project, you might say, you know, the pamphlets that you have printed, the Keep It Clean because we're all downstream, you're actually trying to get some buy-in from consumers. So I guess the question would be, what do average people on a regular basis do that could in some way contribute to, you know, pollution of source water?
Well, we look at residential practices in general as a potential contaminant source to drinking water supplies. So
residential practices in general, so just living in a house?
Well, for instance, if you're fertilizing your lawn, and you over-fertilize, and soon thereafter there's a rainstorm, it's likely that a lot of those nutrients will be washed into the street, into the storm drain, and then down to the river. Also, for communities that have on-site wastewater treatment systems, also known as septic systems, and if they have those in, let's say, a subdivision, but there's a community drinking water supply via a well that serves everybody in that subdivision, if your septic tank is failing, that could pollute your groundwater drinking water supply.
Could the fertilizer upset the balance in a septic system as well? Because I want to say there's a fine balance that kind of makes everything work the way it does.
Right, and I didn't actually think of those two as related, but two gotcha. Different types of residential practices that might affect a community well.
Okay, fair enough. Gotcha. I missed the separation there. So, yeah. So if there is an issue with the septic system and if you put more fertilizer maybe than is recommended, I notice I read that warning every time I fertilize the lawn. You know, it is against federal law to use this in a way that is inconsistent with the labeling, right? And so that is actually what it's talking about.
Right,
is pollution. That's what they're trying to prevent there.
Yes, we encourage people to follow the directions on the labels.
Or at least read them, right?
That's a start.
At least I could tell you what it said, right? You got to give me credit for that. So what is the call to action today for folks that are listening? What would, at the end of the program today, what would the two of you hope people would take away from this conversation?
Well,
they're pointing at each other, by the way. You can't see this when you're listening, but they're basically looking at each other saying,
No, you go. Thanks, Gabe. I think we could both answer the question, but I'll start out first because Mark can give a perspective from a water provider.
Perfect. Okay.
So when we developed this idea of the West Slope Keep It Clean Partnership, we have borrowed this idea from Boulder County in the city of Boulder, which were required to do some education as part of their stormwater permitting. And we realized that a lot of information is out there about protecting our waterways, our rivers and streams, and keeping them healthy. And most of that information is put out there by the watershed groups, like the Roaring Fork Conservancy, Middle Colorado Watershed Council, Eagle River Watershed Council. But lacking in those historic messages was the connection to drinking water. So we realized that in working with the water providers, that we could create a nexus in some of the messaging that's already out there and that people are aware of and pay attention to. But to throw the extra layer of drinking water protection on top of that, we're hoping that really hits home and people even pay more attention to what they're doing, because now they realize that their activities could affect not only downstream drinking water supplies, but their own as well.
So, Mark, from the standpoint of a municipal water supplier.
Well, and I'm going to go back to when we started on this program. One of the things that I was looking at was to have common language amongst all the different water purveyors. And so when we did this program, we tried to get as many municipalities to buy in and participate in this program, so that when we do this, when we set this up and get it out to the community, everybody is looking at the same language and it's easy to understand. The program itself, being already out there on the Front Range, I think has got the language down. We've all kind of in our watershed protection plans have our own differences because we're in different watersheds and we have different interests in watershed protection. We're able to do that, but the core communication and the core messages are all the same. And so I think that that's really important, so that people get a concept from a layman's terminology, they can understand it better. And what I'm hoping is that the information that we have becomes common knowledge throughout the valley and throughout the state. And so we're trying to initiate this campaign and get this information out there so that people can recognize it and they can pick up on it and have a pretty good idea what it's all about and bring it into their everyday practices.
Again, there are a number of these. There's printed information that will be available throughout the area. And if anyone is interested in learning more, they can go to roaringfork.org/keepitclean. And I'm assuming that, is that just a link to the printed pamphlet, or is there some additional information there as well?
Well, the pamphlet is certainly one of the features of our project here. And we've also printed these out in Spanish, too. So we wanted to be able to connect with our Latino friends and neighbors in the region and, you know, have information available to them as well. But we've also produced stickers and coloring books for the kids. And really, the signature item of this campaign is our stream crossing signs. So these signs, they say, keep it clean, we're all downstream, because we're all downstream. But we've adhered a specific nameplate for each stream, creek, or river crossing that is going on these signs, 35 of them, between Vail, Rifle, and Aspen. And so these signs, we're coordinating our advertising and this promotion with the placement of these signs by our project sponsors and partners. And so 35 of them are going to be in this regional area, each with a specific name correlating to the stream that you're about to cross.
Could you name all 35 if I asked you, if I gave you a minute to think about it?
Maybe.
I may challenge you to that.
Again, there are some duplicates, Gabe. So.
Okay. Well, that would make it easier. We'll take a quick break. Again, the website, if you want to learn more, is roaringfork.org/keepitclean. Again, it's a cooperative effort of a number of different municipalities, nonprofits, called the together you all call yourselves the West Slope Keep It Clean Partnership. Back in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again this afternoon, we're talking with Mark O'Mara, the utility director for the town of Carbondale. Paul Hempel is source water protection specialist for the Colorado Rural Water Association. Both partners in the West Slope Keep It Clean partnership. Again, the topic is source water protection. Again, something that's been around since the... was it the Drinking Water Act of 1996, or since the Drinking Water Act was renewed in 1996 and changed and all of that? So we were talking about those. This is a big campaign, particularly this year in this area, and a number of materials printed. Again, the website, roaringfork.org/keepitclean. And you also have some Keep It Clean because we're all downstream signs at various river crossings. You said from Vail to Rifle to Aspen. I know you probably can't tell us all 35 of those, but throw a few out just for example.
Okay. Well, you will have Gore Creek, Gypsum Creek, Eagle River, Colorado River, Rifle Creek. I think we have signs going up in the Roaring Fork Valley on Cattle Creek, Frying Pan River, Crystal River, Snowmass Creek, Lincoln Creek, Grizzly Creek, the Forest Service, White River National Forest Service is a partner in our efforts here. Some are duplicate, but we did order through our budget 35 of these signs with potential for more in future years.
And again, these are the nice outdoor signs that you typically see in parks and that kind of thing, of informational in nature. And again, just kind of trying to remind everybody that you know there's somebody downstream, so be careful what you do and what ends up in the river. I recall every year the Middle Colorado Watershed Council has a big cleanup day, and they'll go out and they'll clean up a stretch of river. And it's really interesting the types of things that they say they find on the banks of the river. Would you consider that part of your awareness, awareness just about trash in general?
Oh, sure. As far as drinking water, there are municipal water supplies that come off of these rivers, and so they've got to clean. They collect water from these areas, and so styrofoam and things like that all end up in the collection boxes for the drinking water, and that all takes people to clean out things like that. Plus the degradation of that in the water itself would have something to do with it.
Everybody's always looking for the, well, how does this really affect me? Is it really an issue? So let me throw a scenario out and tell me if this is accurate. Obviously, all of the, particularly at the municipal level, you have certain standards, as you mentioned before, Mark, that you have to meet for contaminants and that kind of thing. And that's why you put chlorine in the water, right, is to kill the bacteria.
Right.
So people think, well, the city has to clean it to make it drinkable for me anyway, so why does it really matter what happens upstream? It's kind of what you're addressing there. Whatever comes into the intake, the raw water intake to the delivery system, has to be cleaned in some way or modified or changed so that it is safe to drink when it comes out the faucet.
Correct. So there's in the watershed protection aspect, contamination coming into the watershed, say, for example, a quart of oil. Those are things that the treatment facilities are not designed to remove. And in order to design those facilities to remove certain contaminants, you're talking millions of dollars. So, and there are instances where a vehicle will crash off of the road and into a stream. whether it be the Crystal River, the Roaring Fork, the Colorado, some of the other water supplies. And so they are, when the emergency responders are aware of that, the police departments, things like that, some of the first people they get a hold of is the water provider, so that they know that they've got a car in the river that could be releasing contaminated materials.
So, for instance, can you speak from a firsthand basis? So, say something, I don't know if you have, if you take raw water from the Roaring Fork River, but assuming you do, say Roaring Fork Fire Rescue calls you, the newly consolidated Basalt and Snowmass Fire Department. So, say they call, they say, we've got a car in the river upstream somewhere. What actions would you take at that point? I'm assuming you don't have that $1 million equipment that can actually separate out the oil. So would you just take more raw water from a different source? How would you do that? What would that mean for your for the town of Carbondale?
In general, I would say that we would shut that supply down.
Okay.
And let that float by. If it floats by, or it would transcend downstream. But it would shut. We would shut the plant down.
And would that affect your capacity for providing drinking water?
For those municipalities that have an alternate supply, which Carbondale does have, it would not.
Okay.
Provided, depending on the demand of the system.
Right, sure. So you essentially have a backup,
yeah,
if you will. Okay.
There are municipalities that don't have that backup, though. So they could be severely impacted.
So in that case, they'd be relying on whatever storage they have.
Correct, until it's deemed safe to go ahead and deliver that water.
How would you make that determination? Would you do testing at your intake site, or?
I think it depends on the circumstance.
Oh, fair enough. I realize we're getting.
You'd have to assess it on site and see what the circumstance is.
We're getting pretty specific here, I suppose. That's, like I said, that's one of the dangers of talking to me, as I get off on these little tangents that seem interesting to me. Hopefully they are to somebody else that may be listening.
Well, I think, you know, you're bringing up some good points, both of you guys. And Mark mentioned linking the emergency responders to the water providers. So that's a very important part of our source water protection work, so that those water providers know where those intakes are, and or the emergency managers have an idea where they are, so they can communicate with the water providers so they can do the right thing to protect their drinking water.
By the way, all of the agencies that are participating in the West Slope Keep It Clean partnership have different information on their websites. A lot of it will be similar, but they've kind of tailored it for their own personal reasons and experience and based on what they do. So if you're interested in learning more, again, the main website where most of the information is, including where you can download this pamphlet, is roaringfork.org/keepitclean. Now, the partners, the Keep It West Slope Keep It Clean partners, include City of Aspen, City of Glenwood, Eagle County, Garfield County, the Eagle River Watershed Council, as we mentioned before, Middle Colorado Watershed Council, Pitkin County, of course, Roaring Fork Conservancy, who is hosting, again, the website, and they've got a download link. I'm sure most of these actually have a download to the pamphlet as well. Town of Basalt, Town of Carbondale, Town of Eagle, Town of Gypsum, Vail, and White River National Forest. In addition, of course, to the Colorado Rural Water Association, where Paul is from, I think I mentioned everybody.
Right.
So if you recognize one of those organizations, if you live in one of those municipalities, you can get more information from their website as well as it pertains to that particular municipality.
Yes, and also I need to mention the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment.
Right.
They are what is called the primacy agency for source water protection in the state of Colorado. And in their unique approach to source water protection, they've made available to every water provider who wants to work with Colorado Rural Water Association to develop a source water protection plan. They've offered $5,000 grants to help develop the plans. And also they, for this project, awarded $5,000 grants for Town of Basalt and Gypsum. Therefore, those two entities are part of our partners. And then we went out to these other entities and got sponsorship funds of $1,000 each once a year for 3 years. So to launch this campaign, we started out with a budget of $18,500 and hope to have another, let's say, $5,000 to $8,000 in the future over the next couple of years to build upon our efforts.
So this is the first year, but this is not the last year. It will continue at least for the next 2 years, at least the next 3 years, 3 years total.
Correct. And then we'll assess, our response out there in the community, maybe print more brochures, develop more signs, whatever's needed, come up with other advertising angles, depending on the budget.
And to be clear, this is not a regulatory action or organization. The intent of the partnership, the West Slope Keep It Clean Partnership, is informational in nature.
Correct. And even source water protection planning in Colorado is not regulatory or mandatory. It's a voluntary part of if a water provider wanted to work with us to do a plan. And so even when they produce a plan, nothing in it is regulatory. We produce what are called source water protection areas. So if you looked at a map and there was an outline of a watershed, that might be the overall protection area. And again, even those protection areas are non-regulatory, but we're hoping the county governments and municipalities, when they do future land use planning, will recognize those protection areas in relation to the water supplies and then make the appropriate land use decisions based on that.
Again, you can learn more at roaringfork.org/keepitclean or the websites of any of the agencies or organizations I mentioned a couple minutes ago. One final break and tell you where you can pick up the hard-printed, the paper pamphlet in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking with Paul Hempel from the Source Water Protection Specialist from the Colorado Rural Water Association. Mark O'Mara is the utility director for the town of Carbondale. Again, if you want to learn more about the Western Slope Keep It Clean Partnership, go to roaringfork.org/keepitclean. That's kind of the local primary agency, I guess you might say. But any number of the organizations or municipalities that I mentioned should have information as it relates to their individual organization. During the break, we're talking about some things that you may not realize that could affect source water protection. Mark, you're saying that wildfire is actually a big one for a number of reasons.
Yeah, and this goes back, I think a lot of people were here with the Lake Christine fire and Storm King and Coal Seam fire. The effect of that on drinking water is pretty dramatic in that there's a lot of erosion and debris flows and things like that that happen after the fact. It puts the treatment plants themselves at risk from being destroyed by the fires. So those were some of the things that, at least in Carbondale, that was one of the first projects we did with one of our treatment plants was we removed the wood siding and put up metal siding on it to keep it more resilient to wildfire.
Sure. Something else that I thought of as well that we've heard a lot about, it does pertain to source water protection, though I'm not sure that it's necessarily been the public outreach has been to that end, the prescription drug takebacks. A few years ago, they started testing water and reservoirs and that kind of thing. They're like, why is there antibiotic in the water? Is because people were flushing their prescription drugs down the drain. And so that's one of the big reasons why they have those prescription drug takebacks from time to time, aside from the fact this terrible opioid problem that we have. And I believe that there were some of those drugs that were showing up in the water as well. And so that's why it's important if you're not going to use the prescription drugs or if someone passes away, whatever the case may be, you actually take it back to the pharmacy and they'll dispose of it or do whatever they need to so that it's safe. Because I'll be honest, you guys may disagree. Obviously, pollution is not good. That's what scares me more than anything is, what kind of prescription type drugs can potentially get into groundwater. And I know it takes a lot because it dilutes, right? But still, I don't know. That one is the one that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really good point with the prescription drugs. Because we in Carbondale, we've got both the water treatment and the wastewater treatment. So, you know, when people flush things down the toilet, the treatment systems are not necessarily set up to remove the prescription drugs that are flushed down.
Could you? Is there a way you could neutralize that? How would you do that?
It would be extremely expensive because of the variation of the chemical compounds that are in prescription drugs, as well as household items. You know, there's cleaners and a lot of different chemistry that people buy at the store that ends up down the drain. If it ends up going down the drain inside of a house, it ends up going down into the sewage treatment plants. Some sewage treatment plants are not capable of removing those. It ends up in the river.
Again, you can learn more, roaringfork.org/keepitclean. And where can you pick up the printed version of the Keep It Clean, because we're all downstream flyer?
Well, we've produced thousands of these, and each one of our project partners and sponsors were given, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 each in Spanish and English. So all of the watershed groups will have these available in their offices and at summertime fairs, farmers markets, etc. The municipalities and counties will have them available where you pay your water bill or at the reception desk when you walk in to that particular agency.
And again, that includes Eagle, Garfield, Pitkin counties, as well as the cities of Aspen, Glenwood, Carbondale, Eagle, Gypsum, Vail, Basalt, and, of course, the Roaring Fork Conservancy, the Middle Colorado Watershed Council, the Eagle, what is the name of their?
River Watershed Council.
Thank you. And, of course, the White River National Forest as well. Again, Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment is a partner in this, as is, there's one more that I keep, Colorado Rural Water Association. Anything else, gentlemen, that we should mention that we haven't talked about yet?
Thank you, Gabe, for
it's my pleasure.
On board.
My pleasure. By the way, Mark is famous. His grandpa is the one that started O'Mara. It's O'Mara Ford in Denver, right? Way back, what is it, 20s?
1913.
That's so cool. That's so awesome. Just wanted to mention that. And he's also a neighbor, so that makes a difference. Neighbors got to take care of neighbors, right? Paul, anything else you'd like to mention?
Nope, except for the fact that we're excited to be launching this, and we're very grateful to KMTS for allowing us this opportunity to help promote our work.
Again, website, if you want to learn more about this, go to any one of those organizations' websites that I just mentioned, or you can also go to roaringfork.org/keepitclean. Gentlemen, all the best. Talk to you
soon.
Thank
you. Thanks so much, Gabe.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.